Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Live with Mike. He's Mike Shannon. I'm Mike Claiborne. Our special guest is Cardinal Hall of Famer Jim Ebbins, along with a number of other titles you have. Multiple Gold Glove winner, World Series champion, broadcaster, special assistant to the president, outfield coach. I mean, what's left?
This right here.
Yeah, okay. All
except
right.
For I'm missing the restaurant and the glass of wine.
Your restaurant, yeah. Too. Yeah.
Mike's restaurant.
Right. Now, hold on a second. One of your titles is you're the associate or the assistant,
the assistant to the president. Would be Mozeliak. Baseball ops. Mo.
Oh, Mo. Okay.
Yeah, John Mozeliak.
Oh, okay. And he didn't talk to you, you say?
No, we haven't spoke very much.
He says hello and keeps going.
I think the title is the way it reads. It's I'm the assistant to the president of baseball operations, but I feel like more the assistant to the manager because he's the one that seems to be directing traffic and telling me what to do. So
you know,
report to him.
I contend that this ball club wouldn't be even close if it wasn't for the manager. He's done an unbelievable job. First of all, you know, we're better defensively, we're better on the bases, we're better here, we're better there. It just hasn't transferred or correlated to the bottom line. And that's because I think that he doesn't have enough winners on this baseball team, plain and simple. And if you don't play this game, I don't think you can understand that.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's definitely a lot of scenarios and a lot of things that go on day in, day out that you just can't explain, you can't describe, you can't make it up. If you're not down there in that locker room for some point of time and see how it really works, yeah, it's almost impossible to describe what's going on.
And I can tell you one thing, and Tony La Russa, and I didn't agree with a lot of his philosophies, but you couldn't argue with his success because he was tremendously successful. But when he went into that one World Series and he made up his 25-man roster, 28 or whatever it is, and he put the third baseman on there, he in my mind, he lost the series right there. Because
Troy Glaus.
Correct,
in the playoffs. Yeah.
And that's just my own assessment, okay? Mm-hmm. I think that he lost it, and they did lose. And you were on that team, right?
No, not that year.
No. Oh, okay.
No, that was right after I left. But, no, I understand what you're saying, and you're right. There's just things that you see from being either around the game like you, Mike, or being in the game like you, Mike, and – I mean, you can kind of see things coming, and you can make moves that you can that are seem right, but they can backfire, and you can also see that coming.
And we've got a situation here with the guy that's playing right field tonight. If he's not in the lineup, I don't think the other players on this 25-man roster really like it.
I can see that. I can see that. I think, like you said, I think Mike Schilt has done a really nice job. I think that he's a guy, when you talk to him or see him on TV or through the media, you get the nice, really good baseball guy. But when you're down there, he doesn't put up with anything.
Yeah.
Like you saw
– he makes you accountable.
Yeah, you saw a couple – maybe a month ago or something that someone came out of a game and threw something. I forget what it was. And he went right there. He was like not going to let these athletes walk over him and do things that they shouldn't be doing as far as discipline. He don't mind getting in your face. I mean, I've been in a couple meetings with him where he's had to get – down and dirty, and I was like kind of shocked, which I'm pleasantly surprised because he is so mild-mannered and so calm all the time, and it's good to see that he's got a fiery side.
You know, I call it the red ass. I mean, when you get him, yeah. I mean, you know what? I've been around him where the paint's almost come off the wall, and justifiably so. He doesn't embarrass people. That's the one thing. And you guys both play. I'm sure managers, when they wanted to get to you, they didn't make it a public issue. They pull you off to the side. And
yeah,
they
the
talk
good
to
managers.
You. Yeah,
they,
the good ones
they,
do.
They
yeah.
call you in the office, and they try to make it where the press doesn't find out. They don't try to throw anybody under the bus. You know, I can go down and talk to the manager. I know Jim can too. And you say, hey, how about this or how about that? And he can't throw the guy under the bus. But he knows it. We know it. So we don't ask the question because it's useless to ask the darn question, you know. Why are you playing this guy? Or, You know, why are you playing that guy? Or why aren't you doing this? Or why aren't you doing that? Well, it's very simple. You know, when you don't have the horses, you're not gonna win. Period.
Yeah.
You know, the great story is with the Pepper Martin. You know, Pepper Martin. The Yankees used to work out, come on 10 o'clock and work till 2. Cardinals would come out at 8 o'clock and work till noon, and then come back out at 2 o'clock and work till 4, something like that. So the players complained, and so he went into the manager, and the manager said, "Well, the Yankees win every year." And he says, "Well, you know what, Skipper?" He says, "I've got a mule down in Arkansas." He said, "I can get that mule up every morning at daylight and work him all day long." And he said, "He never is going to win the Kentucky Derby." And if you don't have the horses, you're not going to win, plain and simple.
Well,
and,
yeah, I think you're right on that, too. And back to your first topic, I think that, you know, I think Mike Schilt has a lot of Tony La Russa in him. And I think that what could make him really successful. But you're right. I felt like I could almost compare this team to, like, my Anaheim days, where you have a lot of good players, and on paper it's a no-brainer. You got great pitching. You got young athletes that can play. But sometimes there's that edge that to an older player who's already gotten paid, who's already learned how to win. And when I feel like sometimes when you have a younger group, that edge or that polished day in and day out routine isn't there. They're still trying to find their way.
We've had those players here before.
Yeah, we have.
And they've been traded away or given away. And I can go back to Bing Devine, and when he gave away the second baseman. And he went over to Kansas City.
Oh, Patek.
No.
Oh, Cookie Rojas.
Cookie Rojas. Yeah. And he was an all-star over there for like 2 or 3 years, and he just gave him to him, okay? He wanted to get him off the team, you know. He asked me to come back 1 year. I said, "I'm not going to come back." He said, "I'll just mess up your team." I said, "First of all, there's 2 or 3 guys in there I'm going to walk in the clubhouse and I'm going to pick a fight with." I said, that's the first thing. And the second thing is I'm going to mess up your whole team, so just forget about me.
Hey, you mentioned being on ball clubs with veteran players. You know, you have two kinds. You have guys who know how to win, it just aren't enough of them. And then you have guys who just are there and have no idea on what it takes to win and take it to the next level. They may have all the talent in the world, but they don't know how to win. And there's a big difference. How do you deal with that when you're on a ball club like that?
Well, thank God my last 10 years I didn't have to worry about that because I had all those good teams. You know, it's just my assessment of how my two careers went with Anaheim and here. And I probably said to even to myself, I was probably a pretty good player in my 20s, but I didn't really learn the game until I was in my 30s. And I think that's true for a lot of players. Mm-hmm. And so how you handle it, I don't know. You know, I talked to Dexter a lot. It's funny, he's probably the oldest guy on the team now. And he's, you know, the same thing. He's always, like, trying to pull the young guys together. And, you know, it's hard to get these guys to understand. But it's not all of them. But I think there's just those experiences you get over time. And, like, La Russa would just hammer it into you every day about how winning is important, how you got to win, how you got to do this. And then he would take you aside if you didn't do something and be like, "Hey, what I'm looking for is this, not this." And so you tried it, but it didn't work because of this. And I just felt like that every day was an amazing change for my game.
Did you have to mentally condition yourself? Because when you're getting pounded on every day compared to when you were in Anaheim and maybe the urgency wasn't as high, how much did you have to change your own mindset in that situation?
You know what? I loved it. I loved the demand for success. I think it also made me a better player. And also loved the fact that everyone in this dang city is behind you. And I feel like, for me, you almost feel the pressure of that just as I did. And I felt like losing wasn't an option because everybody, everywhere you go, grocery store, the mall, whatever, they're asking you, "Hey, what's going on? Hey, why are you losing? Hey, great job last night." So when you start to get that feeling and that push from everyone, I think it does ramp up your game and definitely has it weighs on you a little bit. And you know you need to go out there and you don't have to do anything special. You just got to play the game the right way.
Jim Edmonds is our guest. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more on the Cardinals Radio Network. We continue with Live with Mike. Mike Shannon's here. I'm Mike Claiborne. Jim Edmonds is our special guest. We want to remind everybody that Live with Mike is brought to you by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
This is the kind of team that can get a broadcaster fired, too.
Which broadcaster?
I mean, if you want to tell the truth a lot of times,
yeah,
you're going to.
It's hard.
Yeah, you're going to. So consequently, you have to. You have to skirt around some issues once in a while. Yeah, and you have to talk in a manner that somebody out there listening knows what to pick out and what not to pick out.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's a perfect way of putting it, because you can't always be perfectly truthful even though you're trying to be, because you don't. I remember what it's like, and that's something that I pride myself. When you're in there in that clubhouse, you're sensitive, because even if you're doing well, there's still doubt in your mind and there's still failure, and so you're always sensitive to what other people are saying. And I just like try to go backwards on that. Like, you know, everyone was pushing Colton Wong for a long time. He wasn't improving. He wasn't doing this, and he wasn't really learning the game. And then all of a sudden, with a bunch of talks through people, and you're starting to see his game get a little bit more polished in the last year or so in the second half. And we've had some really great talks. And, you know, and then in spring training, he made a couple bad plays, and you pull him, you know, like, hey, you don't have to make that play. It's like still a learning process, right? It's like throwing the ball from the outfield. Well, when you have a great arm.
He's kind of like what you said, you know. He's played the game a long time, and it's starting to fall into
place.
Yeah,
that's what I think. And I think that's what I'm saying. He's kind of turning his game up a notch. But it's like a young outfielder with a good arm, right? What do you have? The one thing you always have to tell him is, hey, you don't have to throw the ball 100% every time. Like, he's always trying to show off the arm. Always overthrowing everybody. And that's
just part of it.
Yeah, it's just part of it. You know, it's sometimes you have to dial it back. And learn and not make a bad throw or not throw the ball to the wrong base. And sometimes that saves the game versus hitting a home run.
I'm going to go back to something you just said about pitchers. And I think that's one of the problems we see, where guys can only go five, maybe six innings, because it's max effort. They're grunting on every pitch. And by the sixth inning, they're at 100 pitches. And they look at the scoreboard and they say, well, it's 100 pitches. I got to go. When they really, it's more of a mental block than anything else, but because they're trying to show off their arm and shoulder velocity on every pitch, they got nothing left.
Well, I'll tell you what, I almost say you're 100% correct, but you almost have to nowadays, right? Everyone's throwing 96,
yeah.
97.
But you know what? What about the guy who can take a little off here and take a little off and see if he can get a guy to chase?
I don't know if there's guys out there right now like
that.
Well,
I don't think that guy can get seen. I don't think a guy like – yeah, I think him being seen
there's
by –
there's a few guys.
But, man, you know what? He's got to be –
you got to prove it.
Yeah, you
got to
exactly.
prove it.
Yeah.
There's a couple lefties, soft-film lefties. You see the kid in Chicago, Hendricks.
Yeah.
You know, anytime you see those guys, when I'm down in the locker room, and the one thing always sticks out to me is guys like that would be sneaky.
Yeah,
like Hendricks
is
sneaky, is
what they used to call
it. But his fastball
it.
Is sneaky 90. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like he still jams guys because he can throw the ball where he wants to. He's not max effort, but his ball jumps out of his hand because it's tough to pick up.
Well, you take Wainwright. If Wainwright's not spotting his fastball and he doesn't have confidence in his fastball, he's finished. He's done. It's over.
Yeah, and there's another guy, too, like always learning, always trying. Me being who I am, which is to a pitcher, especially younger pitchers, have no idea that I played or even paid attention. But I said to him in spring training, I said, hey, I think you should throw some four-seamers. And he was like looking at me like, really? And I was like, I think you got a spot where when you throw certain pitches as a fastball, guys already know where it's going to end up. Mm. So if you throw a fastball into a lefty, they know it's going to run back. And then you either have to throw a cutter. But I said, if you start throwing four-seamers in, like, or into a righty, and that ball doesn't run off the plate for a ball like they think it's going to, you're going to start locking guys up. And then progress. He threw one the first day, and like he threw two the second start. And like he's starting to find that he can use it when he needs it. And like I said, all of a sudden that fastball doesn't run off the plate for a ball anymore, and you can freeze people. And it's just observations that you watch. You know, I've been watching the game for so long.
I got a kick out of La Russa. He called Gibson, and he said, hey, I want you to come in and talk to my pitchers. And he said, about what? He said, well, he said, about not trying to challenge everybody. He said, you know, did you pitch to Billy Williams every time? He said, no, I walked him because I knew I could get the next guy out. You know, there's such a thing
that,
as having
there's an art to that, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's I would bet that's being smart.
Yeah,
you got to be smart in this game, too. It isn't, like you said, all about arms.
Or talent.
You got to know, what you can do.
Well, and
then
I asked him one year, after I played third base one year, I said, is there anything you want me to do over there? He said, no, I don't care what you do, unless there's a man at first and less than two outs. He said, then pay attention. And the next six right-handed batters hit me one hoppers. I said, well, he just took a two-seamer and turned it over a little bit and ran it into the right-handed batter, and he pulled his hands in, and boom, one hopper. But, you know, he had that kind of talent that he could do things like that. And what you're talking about with a pitcher and saying, well, you got to throw a four-seamer and you got to throw a cutter because it doesn't wind up in the same place every time.
And, you know, I think, too, what I've noticed just even the young pitchers is it's a lot for them to change a routine after this at this point. You almost have to fail and fail miserably.
You hit rock bottom.
A little bit, which is crazy because all you're saying is, hey, try this and see if this works. But – you know, up there, they've gone, well, I've gotten this far without that or without changing. Why am I going to change now? And then the guys that adapt.
Because this is the big leagues.
Yeah, and if he's not confident on throwing that pitch, it's going to get lost.
Yeah.
If he doesn't have belief that I can get this guy.
You a great example. That was Carlton when he was here. He'd win 20 games and he'd lose 20
games. He went 19-19 one year.
Well, and the reason was because he wouldn't throw inside the right-handed batters. I said, Lefty, you gotta jam the right-handers. You can't keep throwing that ball out.
Leaning out over the plate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll kill you. And then when he came up with that little dinky slider, that succumbed. And it was over from then on. He just did that little thing, and it protected the outside.
Yeah, and I think that the audience, like the people that we explain the game to, don't realize why and how you pitch in, first of all. Because, you know, obviously you get guys that don't pitch in, and guys are leaning all over the plate, and it's easier to see the breaking ball. You start pitching into people, and they have to start being respectful of that fastball in, and they start flinching a little bit and speeding them up, and then that's where the breaking ball and the slider, and that's why some guys get away with that good breaking ball or slider because they're effectively trying to throw the ball inside. You get some of those guys that are later in the bullpen where they just throw the ball outside, 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 outside. Eventually, they're going to get hit.
Exactly. He's Jim Ebbins. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more on the Cardinals Radio Network. We continue with Jim Ebbins. We welcome everybody back. And, of course, Live with Mike is brought to you by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill. You and I talked in spring training about something when you watch the kids, and the one piece of advice is pay attention. Willie McGee says the same thing. You know, watch the ball no matter where it's at. Just pay attention to what's going on around you. Where do we lose that? Because there's a lot of guys who don't pay attention, and I don't know if there's as much banter in the dugout. And, Mike, you played in an era where guys were always talking about the game. Are we missing something as far as communication? I'll ask both of you guys that question.
Well, the one thing that strikes me, and I guess I never thought of it this way, is guys are getting to the big leagues so much faster now. The talented players are getting here a lot. Like, there used to be a number, say, 1,000 at-bats for a player, or how many innings for a pitcher. They're not doing that anymore. And so they're learning at the big league level. And I feel like the way I learned, or the way I kind of got my game together, was in the minor leagues because I had to do little things in order to play at that level. And so I just kind of carried over. I think guys are here, they don't even realize they're supposed to be watching the catcher's signs or trying to watch the flight of the ball come out of the pitcher's hand. So, yeah, I don't know where we lost it, how we lost it, but it's like that teaching that skill all over again.
I can tell you when we lost it. Money.
Yeah.
Monetarily, you know. It's so important to get a guy to the big leagues now before he's going to really produce. And, you know, and the Players Association talking about that now, you know, where a guy, you know, you take a young, talented player and he's only making the minimum. And he's putting out numbers that are unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know where the answer is, but I know the answer to what you're talking about is they bring those kids up early, and then on the other hand, they'll leave a guy down in the minor leagues for 15 or 20 days because they don't want to bring him up and have
let the clock start running
year,
low.
Sure.
Well, but and that's the other thing though too. I think, and that he just reminded me of something, but the fact that they get up here so fast and they learn at this level, but what I got to say is, at this level, I think the learning curve is slower or longer because the game is so much faster up here. So you're trying to learn and change when the game's already going too fast for a lot of these players. And the games are going by like that as far as thought process. And they're like, oh, shoot, I forgot to do this today.
Yeah, you mentioned something, too.
You can go
too,
a month without even paying attention to the catcher.
You mentioned something, too, that when they get here, they say, well, this way got me here.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I'll give you an example. When I went from the outfield to play third base, I said to Bob Skinner, I said, who can tell me how to play third base? He said, what do you mean? I said, who's the best guy you know? And so he did. He was with Philadelphia at the time. And he called for me and arranged the guy to talk, and I And he said, what do you need? I said, tell me how to play third base. And he said, what do you mean? I said, just start talking. Well, I learned more from him in 15 minutes about playing third base than it had taken me 2 years to learn.
Yeah. Oh, I can see that. It's great talking with people. Funny thing you said that. I was talking with Paul Goldschmidt in spring training, and we were talking to one of the young players, and he was stretching too early, and I just kind of simply said, hey, make sure you wait till the ball comes before you start stretching. It was like one of the double-A or triple-A guys. And it was funny because he kind of laughed and he said, there's really no one to teach.
That's the other thing.
That position. Yeah. First base alone. He's like, no one just really teaches you. You just kind of learn from other players and learn from examples. But, like, you're right. There is no guy to teach that position, especially defense.
They don't keep that guy around anymore either.
Well, Jose Oquendo was the you know, the doctor.
But, I mean, if you want a team, you play with guys who were veteran guys who kind of showed you a few things along the way. That guy is being eliminated all throughout baseball. And as you said earlier,
money.
Exactly. Go back. They don't want to pay him.
They'd rather pay a young player than an older player. You know, that's what you don't see a whole lot of those Jed Jerkos guys anymore. Or even like when I came up here the first time, we had on the bench, we had at the end of their career, Thomas Howard, Sean Dunston, and Eric Davis all on the same team. And I was like, wow. And talk about having fun on the bench and then also being taught the right way to play the game at the same time.
Jimmy, when I came to the big leagues, okay, I had Stan Musial, had Kurt Simmons, Bobby Shantz, Kenny Boyer, the guy I'm talking about that I learned, Don Hoke, okay. He's the guy that 15 minutes taught me more about playing third base. And then, I mean, it was like 175 years of experience. So, I mean, and I didn't say anything for 2 years. Or somebody stuff a towel in your mouth, you know. But you know, of course, that was a different era. And now the guys I'm talking about that played in your era that we've had here and that have been traded away, Jay, for one. Okay.
Old school guys.
Yeah. And the guy that was with the Yankees, the guy that Adam struck out on to put us into the World
Series. Beltran?
Carlos
Beltran.
You know?
Well, I mean, you know, it's funny you say that too, because even when I played, when we had the Players Association would come in and meet with us, and they said the way the game is going, they're going to run this type of player out of the game. And that's the mid-level older player, because they're declining and they're not paying for that experience anymore. They're just they basically said, you watch, this will wipe, and it did. It wiped them out.
You're right.
And it's older players.
That even went back to my
And that's
my
almost
era.
Like now, and you see that free agency pool that's just sitting out there. They're even doing that to guys that are just because they're afraid to give them money. Like, you see the closer now in Chicago and a couple of guys. I mean, there's probably still three or four guys out
sitting
there that just
home.
Aren't playing.
Well,
how about
I look at a guy like Adam Jones, who didn't have a job until March. It might be the best player on Arizona's team as far as consistency in the leadership that he showed. But he had to take – he's only making $3 million. But considering what he used to make, and you're right, they're going to eliminate that guy in 5 years from now.
They've already done it, I think. Those guys are even on the brink too. And it's weird. Yeah,
John Jay's, they don't make that big money, but so they're still around. But a guy like that's you cannot replace him.
No, you're right.
What he's going to do, it's like when Boyer went to Kenny Boyer went to Los Angeles, you know, and the manager out there said, Walt said, I want you to play next year. And he said, Walt, I can't play anymore. He said, yeah, I know. He said, but I'll protect you. He said, but I want you to
help this team.
Yeah, he had Say, he had Russell, he had Lopes. And Garvey.
Yeah.
And he said, you can do that better as a player than as a coach. And he was right.
Oh, yeah. I think.
And he did. He taught him how to act as big leaguers.
Yeah,
he taught him how to dress.
Yeah, I think it's hard for a coach. I think it's better for a player to sit there day in and day out with you. You don't have that authority figure kind of looking over your shoulder. You have a peer or a friend. You know, and I've kind of tried to use my role at kind of sneaking in there as neither and more of a friend type approach, because I think that it's important to show that you care for these guys.
You have to be careful too, because then, you know, you're taking a coach's responsibility.
Oh, that's another thing I've noticed over the last couple of years. You walk into that clubhouse, man, and there's definitely, which I love about this staff in general, No one's afraid.
Everybody's
for their,
comfortable.
No one's afraid for their job, and no one, you know, you still have to go in pecking order. But if I walk up to one of the pitchers and say, "Hey, I think you're tipping your pitch this way or that way," I don't have to worry about what Maddox thinks or says, because one, I'll either for sure going to tell him, or two, he trusts me and he knows that I'm not going to do anything to, you know, cause a little bit of.
I think that's because of the organization and family. This has always been, you know, everybody.
Everybody's trying to help each other be better. It's not like this is a stepping stone job. Let's take another break. Mike Shannon's here. He's Jim Edmonds. I'm Mike Claiborne, coming back with more on the Cardinals Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. We continue with Jim Edmonds along with Mike Shannon. We're here at the ballpark. I know, Mike, you were going to say something before we went to the break.
What's the most fun you had in playing the game?
Here, first four or five years. Yeah. Team is just always fun and good.
You know, when you played out in Anaheim, you know, you played very shallow like you played here, and they'd hit the ball over the head and they'd blame you instead of themselves, you know.
Well,
and
the pitchers were always good about that. Always stuck up for me, which I loved.
Because they knew you could bail them out.
Yeah, I remember one time Tony was yelling at me here, and Chris Carpenter threw a pitch down the middle, or he missed his location, and the ball was not only hit over my head, but I was hit to the other side of the field. And Tony was like, "I told you, I wanted you to play deeper." And Carp was like pointing behind me, like behind Tony, and going, "Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's my fault. My fault. I'll take care of it." Like, and he did. He did. He tapped Tony on the shoulder. He's like, "It's my fault. I threw it right down the middle." So they, you know, they appreciate that.
That's another thing when pitchers, okay. Now, you know, I'm talking about no miss pitching, okay. And mm-hmm. so he throws 100 pitches in the minor leagues. Well, on 80 of those pitches, he just overmatches the kid down there, okay?
Yeah.
And then he gets up here, and he has to throw 100 pitches. Well, he has to grunt on 80 of those pitches, okay? Especially if it's a good getting against a good team, you know, like the Dodgers or like Houston.
Good players.
I mean there's only three or four. There's only three or four teams left in the big leagues, as I see, that are really good, and those are some of the guys right there.
Yeah, I think that you saw the Dodgers. I mean. Whew. They play.
They play well.
Yeah, they play, and they're talented, and it looks like they're playing and on a roll.
You know, the Dodgers, Houston, I was impressed with Oakland and how they approach the game. I'm trying to think of who else really caught my eye this year. Those three teams stand out. They're all fundamentally sound. They do the right things, and you know what? They take good at-bats. You know what I mean? And batting today – we're going through this transition where everybody wants a launch angle. Everybody wants to have the uppercut swing. And the pitchers just say, "Oh, you going to do that? Well, how about trying to deal with this four-seamer?"
Yeah, because everyone's throwing the ball up in the
zone. Exactly. And you know what? I'm sorry. That's why we have more foul balls. That's why we have more pitchers on our pitch count going higher. And that's why we have a lot more guys that are getting themselves out compared to letting the pitcher get them.
Well, I think that the pitch count for sure has changed dramatically because of a lot of guys have swing and miss stuff, and they're pitching away from contact, which means they're either overthrowing or throwing the strike three pitch all the time and trying to strike guys out because they got big arms. And so you look up there and they're, you know, 2-2, 3-2, 3-1 to every hitter, you know, 0-2 to 2-2. Just trying to make the perfect pitch and overthrowing all the time. And then what happens when you overthrow? Throw the ball down the middle, you strike out two and give up a home run instead of those guys that come in and get a ground ball here, a ground ball there, and you're out of the game.
And you know who that was? That was Jack Flaherty up until about six outings ago. Right. He was that guy that was –
like Miles when he's on.
Exactly.
And he's in the sixth inning with 65 pitches. And
now, Flaherty can still get 10 strikeouts, but you know what? They're boom, boom, boom compared to 3-2 counts and belaboring the point.
You're not
trying
to get you fired, okay?
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
when a fan comes up to you and says, "Hey, the front office didn't address it. They said the players got to the point, and then the front office didn't back them up and go out and get a pitcher or something."
Yeah, what do I say to that? I said I'm the assistant to the president. I don't know anything other than that. So,
but let me ask you this.
I'm really low on the poll.
What are the players saying about that?
You know, I haven't said anything. And I think inside the locker room, from being in that experience before and being in the locker room, I think that they don't pay attention to it too much unless they got you have one of those guys on your team that could be dealt. But I don't. To be honest with you, as a player, I don't think you really know who's out there that can be dealt. You know, I always told – I think Walt Jocketty said it best. He said, when you hear it, it isn't going to happen.
Yeah, it's great.
It's always the stuff that goes down behind closed doors. If you hear a lot of trade rumors, at the deadline, it's probably not going to happen.
What about when you're on a team and Tony or Walt would come in and say, hey, we just picked up such and such, and you knew him because you saw him on the other side. You knew he was a good player. How much does that energize a locker room when you get a good player to come over? Well, I'll give you a good example, like a Larry Walker.
Yeah. You're going to say that. Yeah. You know, it looks. I looked at it two ways. Well, one, it can be Larry Walker's situation is amazing. Like, he came in, he was like a coach, a player, a father, a teammate. I mean, he did it all. But then sometimes, you know, you lose a guy that could be key, and that could turn the club the other way too.
Yeah.
But when I played, they did a really nice job of picking guys up. You know, we got Scott in a trade. We got Larry Walker came over. You know, obviously when I got here, a lot of those deals were trades and free agent acquisitions in that 99, 2000, 2001 window. And I mean, I don't know what to say, but I think that Walt was amazing. I think he did a great job. I think it's a different league now.
Yes.
It's really, from what I hear,
it's harder to make a deal now.
From what I hear, like, everyone's just playing, like, you know, who's got the better deal for you, and they just wind it out until they run out of time. And I think that's changed and made it harder. But you can see some of those deals are done where they're just throwing people out the door, like, or here, we'll give you whoever you want. We want this one guy.
Exactly. Hey, what about character? When you get a guy that comes in a clubhouse that's from somewhere else, how important is character, making sure that he understands what winning values are all about?
Yeah, professionalism, I think, is a big word. I think it's not hard here. You know, I think if you get somebody that hasn't been in an establishment like this, comes from somewhere else and comes here, I think they kind of know already what this place is like, or been told. But I think you get a guy, let's say, from San Diego or Oakland or wherever, a hotshot guy that comes onto a team, say like Kansas City, it could come in and ruin a team in a hurry if you have some kind of agenda, especially if you're an upper level player. I definitely think it's important.
We need to take one, Mike, or we'll keep rolling. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up. Jim Edmonds is here. I want to talk about his TV career. He's having so much fun with that. We'll come back with more here on the Cardinals Radio Network. We continue with Live with Mike. Mike Shannon's here. I'm Mike Claiborne. Jim Edmonds is our special guest. We want to remind everybody that Live with Mike is brought to you by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill. All right, you've done the TV now for a while. And I know Mike used to say when he first started broadcasting, man, it's a whole different look from when you sit up here. You still see things as a player that you convey to the viewers. How much fun is that, and how much of an adjustment was it for you to start watching the game from here compared to in center field?
Yeah, you know, it's the combination of the two was tough for me, is kind of putting it together and knowing that everyone's listening on the outside, but also knowing that they're listening down in the locker room, and know how close I could be with those guys. So it was weird because I feel like I stumbled through a lot of it at the beginning because I wasn't around baseball at all for like 5 or 6 years, and I literally just lost the language, the lingo, you know, as they say, and couldn't get it out of my mouth on TV, and I was worried that what someone was going to think, and, you know, I don't want to beat up the players. I know this game's not easy. And so it took me a while to kind of really just address and kind of talk about certain things, and I think I got better with that, and I've learned to toe the line a little bit. I've gotten a lot of feedback from other guys around the league, yourself included, Mr. Shannon, a lot of advice, and I think that goes a long way. And it's another thing. It takes a lot of time, just like being a player, to polish yourself up here. And I'm still working on it. And it is definitely a different view from up here. And it's funny because you think back, like, if you're ever really rude to the media, which I don't believe I ever was, but I definitely looked at them differently. But that was more to these guys, the paper guys.
Right.
But, you know, they're always writing stuff. And I know when you're talking about the game, you're just calling what you see. But I didn't like, you know, some of the articles that were written, and I guess you kind of pushed them all in the same category, but definitely see a different side of it now. So I'm just like, okay, you guys, have some respect for the media because it's not as easy as it looks.
It's a harder job than people give it credit
yeah,
for.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it a lot. And, you know, as well as anyone, like, not everyone has his status. You can't just walk down the clubhouse anytime you want and go grab a sandwich and – kind of storm into the manager's office.
Put
and
your feet
start
on
talking.
His desk and shoot the breeze.
Yeah. But, like, I mean, you're sitting out there. It's funny to see. You've been around. How long have you been doing this?
Since 81.
So it's funny for me to walk down the clubhouse or walk down and see you waiting for the clubhouse to be open. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, as well as I know you and as well as I know you've been around here, like, he don't have to do that most of the time. Or he won't do that, actually.
You know,
he'll be like, open the door. But it is. It's still like that tedious stuff is the stuff that drives me insane.
But, you know, I understand it, you know. I think former players, you know, you and Mike and guys, that's
but you go in that clubhouse and a lot of times your ears are closed, your eyes are closed.
Yeah. Well, they have to be.
Yeah. You can't take
you
it.
You know,
out
and
of
it used to be that way years and years before I came to the big leagues, and even when I came to the big leagues, there was a lot of things that the writers didn't write.
Oh, because they saw it all the time. Yeah,
they saw it. You know, and they traveled on the
charters.
The charters.
Even
they traveled
on
the
trains.
On the
yeah.
trains, and you know, there's a lot of time on those trains, and there's a lot of things you can get in trouble with. You know, and they saw all that stuff, but they knew if they broke that confidence that was finished.
That was it.
You know?
Yeah, they'd be covering fishing the next week or something.
Yeah, you don't want
to be doing baseball.
Wanna,
that's for sure.
You don't want to.
So that's important
back,
too, you know.
Sure. Yeah,
but,
no.
But and another thing you mentioned, this game is really hard to play. I mean, it's hard. It's not easy. That's why, you know, like I always say, there's 100% of the people. There's the top 10%, and there's the bottom 10%, and then the other
everyone
80%
else.
Is everybody, you know.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, you and Willie McGee, a very interesting relationship because you guys played the position differently, but you guys always talk about the game and what you see and what he sees. How much fun has that been for you? Because, as I said, you guys played the game differently and you both were good at what you did.
And we talk about it, how different it can be done. Mm-hmm. And I love about Willie is he's one of the ones that have basically just said, hey, whatever you see, do it, go for it. Like,
yeah,
they need to hear it from different people. So don't be afraid. You're not stepping on my toes if you're trying to help one of those players. It's like he knows, he trusts me, I trust him. And you know, the only thing, like I said, he's still the coach, so I still got to be careful, you know, not to go against his wishes, and I wouldn't, but there could be some times where something comes up like that.
Yeah, but I think there's a mutual respect.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, I mean,
but I always ask him, and I always talk to him about it, but I love it because he is the first one to admit, hey, one person can't know it all.
How many times does a player come to you and says, hey, Jim, can you do this, or can you help me with this? No, I personally, for me, I say, you tell your manager and then see me off the field.
Yeah, got you know what? I'm down there so much, and I talk to a lot of the guys like that. You know what? I've gotten so comfortable with these guys that I'll actually go to them. Mm-hmm. I won't wait. Just little stuff, you know, and I'll remind guys. Or I love it. You know, like one of the guys that I think probably opened the door for me to really get along with a lot of these younger players is Adam Wainwright. Because when he comes up to me and asks me about his pitching, people are like, whoa. Mm-hmm. Like, why is he asking the center fielder about his pitching? That means he trusts me. He knows that I know what I'm talking about when it comes to him.
Right.
And so the other guys kind of start listening and talking, and it made it really easy to kind of get through to a lot of the younger players, especially the pitchers, that, hey, this guy's paying attention. He knows what he's talking about. That was important for me, I think, to really have that out of Adam.
You earned that respect.
Yeah. Well, I hope so.
Yeah. Plain and simple.
And I'm not running down there and saying, hey, you got to cheer and run harder.
Right.
I'm saying, hey.
That's
I know
not,
how.
That's not
I tell, listen, I tell everyone. I'll talk to, let's say, DeYoung, for example. I tell him, man, I had it a lot easier than you did. I'm left-handed. I said, I can't explain. I can't help you what your everyday approach against righties would be. My only experience I can tell you about is when I faced a tough lefty, this is what I did. Because they're not all tough lefties out there. You know, and being a right-handed hitter is hard, especially at this level. And I didn't have to worry about that. And so, you know, I can only give him so much guidance because just, you know, I didn't do what he's doing. And I didn't have the everyday right-hander pounding me in, sliders away. So I can only go on the experience of, you know, facing a left-hander once in a while. And so it's a little different. So I tell him that. I'm up front. I'm like, hey, I didn't have to be right-handed. I can't tell you what you're going through every day. But when I did play against the lefty that was tough, this is what I thought about. And that's
who was the one lefty that gave you problems that you had to amp up your game mentally?
You know, a lot of the guys that started coming up at the end of my career, the lot of short one inning lefties that threw hard, you kind of really got to be on your toes. You know, they're young and dumb and throwing the ball as hard as they can. Randy Johnson was no fun. if you could imagine. I mean, Randy Johnson tipped his pitches and he knew about it. He didn't even care. That's how good he was. And he was still getting guys out.
Yeah.
I went a couple of years with knowing every pitch that was coming, and I did hit him well, but I was still only hitting, you know, 280 or 300 against him. It wasn't like I was hitting 600 against the guy.
Like Willie Mays, you know, Herman Franks was the manager of the Giants, and they were getting every pitch, you know. So this particular pitcher had the Giants shut out going into the eighth inning, and so Willie walked by Herman, and he says, are you guys getting the pitches? He said, yeah. He said, well, what's going on? He said, well, that's Mr. Gibson out there. it's a big difference.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean.
And, you know, Tony tells a story about receiver pitching to what's his name, and they weren't giving signs. They were just pitching, you know. Steve would wind up and throw what he wanted, you know.
Catch would catch it.
Yeah.
And, the good old days.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Is that too much information out there now? Because there's a lot of information, but that doesn't mean everybody can disseminate it and
I don't
apply
think,
it.
To be honest with you, as much as we hear about it, as much as I see it in the clubhouse, I don't think it's all transferring into the clubhouse. I think the players are still watching video.
Yeah. They pick out what –
it's got to be glaringly obvious for someone to say, hey, this – what they do use a lot of the information for is, like, say, this guy doesn't like to pick over after he throws two pitches in at bat, or when he's behind in the count, he won't pick over, or, you know, like certain things like that. I think they're doing a great job with that. You see the guys running our stolen bases. They do a great job of picking out the guys that they can run against and going after those guys the best they can, catchers that can't throw. Exploit that, and they're exploiting that more than we could have ever done because of those numbers. And I think, yes, it can be way too much, but I think our team does a really nice job of kind of keeping it in the coach's room and not giving too much to the players.
Just about out of time. You're having fun at everything you're doing right now, aren't you?
I am. I think that to be honest with you, my baseball career went fast, and I think you take it for granted, and I love being here listening to you guys talk. I love the craziness of Danny Mac, working with him. I love bringing my son to the ballpark, you know, 50% of the time, letting him run around out there. I just saw Matt Holliday downstairs, and I saw his two kids first, and I was like, what are you guys doing here? But I just love that vibe down there. Guys love Landon, and I love having him around, and it's made it a lot more fun for me, and I'm digging it this year.
Well, we love having you around, man. More importantly, we love you being part of this tonight. So
yeah, it was fun.
We
like
appreciate it, man.
Thank you, sir.
All right, we'll just get the wine after the game.
Yes. He's Jim Evans. That's Mike Shannon. I'm Mike Claiborne. We thank you for listening to another edition of Live with Mike here at the ballpark on the Cardinals Radio Network.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.